Feeling a little run down by the Discourse and Rider fandom? Looking for something fresh to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Well, look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX. Active ingredients. Your MSQ.
I have been watching a progression of Sonic Recolors and Nudes masquerading as art.
Illustrator Clip.
Fire.
MC Pez. Don't you mean YMMV? Side effects may include ascites, show a fever, help with robotophobia, and an English throat. This is the cure for the Kamen Rider Show. Dose as needed. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, this is the 67th episode of Uncommon Cast RX, and we're going to be talking about Kiva for the sixth time.
Yeah.
We only did, like you guys deserve, 20 episodes at a time. We only were able to manage four episodes this time, but they were a good four episodes, I think. And
some are easier to talk about than others, but as this is the 67th episode spectacular, we'll make more of each episode than we might have otherwise done, eh?
Yes.
I don't know about that. We usually make quite a lot of...
All right, okay, fine. Just ruin the 67th episode spectacular before it's even begun.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I forgive you. I'm going to start off with a short synopsis of each episode, and then we'll discuss our talking points. So episode 33, Maya and Atoya work to build his legacy in the form of an exquisite violin. I guess a Stradivarius you would call it, right? And Yuri and Wataru become scorned lovers when they see their loves with another. Atoya and Wataru bathe some more.
Very important part.
Very important part
of the synopsis.
It's crucial.
The buffet, we need it.
Absolutely crucial.
I have a first point.
Okay.
And it's getting at Kamen Rider Wiki again. But I think it's quite important, because I was looking at Maya for some reason, I forget why. And it mentions... Well, it says that in this episode, she is... Or rather, in the episode previous to this, she's forced to reveal that she is a Fangoya by Ricky's attack. That's just not what happened.
No.
She's not forced. She chooses to. And I think that's a very misleading view of her character and of the show in general.
I think a lot of fans pick up.
I think if anyone has editing abilities on Kamen Rider Wiki, you should change that because it's just not true.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans pick up heroic language and being forced to do something. Some people will think of, literally, it's just a flowery way of putting something. They don't necessarily consider it actually means something. Yeah, it does. It shows kind of a misunderstanding of Maya's character and her position, I think.
It's precisely the opposite to what actually happened.
Yeah.
Are you forced or did you choose? She chose. She was not forced.
And we do get to know her very well in these four episodes, I think.
Yeah, my reaction to that was actually, what a smart aleck that Maya is. This is one of the best reaction shots to anything I've ever seen. Otoya says something along the lines of, you're a Fangire, and Maya basically says, and...
Yeah.
There's a fair bit of, it'll come up gradually as we discuss these episodes, but subversion of familiar cliches. Mm. This is one of them, just completely no-selling this monstrous reveal. And Atoya, for whatever reason, doesn't seem that fussed in the end, does he?
No.
But I mean, that could be because he's gradually becoming a zombie.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that.
No, well...
But we'll get to that, won't we?
Yes, we will.
I'm sure Matt has very strong feelings on that.
I'm sure I do. okay. So, I would say that this episode in particular, but these four episodes together, kind of have a lot of foreshadowing in them. Very heavy foreshadowing. A lot of pieces start falling into place. Things I wouldn't have... thought or accepted or recognized early on in the series. Like, I can now see totally how Atoya gets Maya pregnant and how she falls away from her royal duties, if you want to call them that, and becomes Wataru's mother. And
well, yeah, in that sense, there's also a lot of bookending, backshadowing, if you will, where you know, the loose ends are tied up, or just themes sort of come full circle.
Yes, a fair amount of revisitation.
Yeah, but again, we'll get to that later. I've interrupted you.
It's all right.
Read it back in.
Like, I can even foresee from this her being his mom and hiding for a while, or, like, secreting herself away and being his mom, mm-hmm. and then she gets found out, and then things don't go so well for her, as we see with her later in the cave. Like, another thing that occurred to me or struck me was, I would be shocked if Yuri were to stay with Atoya at this point.
yeah.
Unless this is a horrible show, or unless he, in a way, like, loses his mind at some point while writing, I can't see Yuri and Atoya staying together. No way. And
it's crazy how sort of how much they sort of put it in your face. I mean, it's really kitchen sinky. Yuri watching Maya and Atoya hang
have
out
hand
together.
Sex.
Yeah, often from a very physical, explicit lower level.
Yes,
like she's on the next floor down, and there's something between them, like the balustrade or whatever it is between them.
Mm.
Yeah, it's. You'd have to be some kind of robot to not feel sorry for it.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. Although, I think it was in this episode that she's... Oh, no, it's later. But when she's beating up that rat, I had flashbacks to Buffy, where she's patrolling to make herself feel better when she's sad.
Mm.
And made me want to watch Buffy, but it was cool.
The cutting between those two scenes, maintaining Atoya's music...
being just beautiful.
It's great, but it does show, I think, well, I mean, as you said, we don't want her to stay with Atoya at this point, but it just makes you look forward to her moving on, doesn't it? Because, I mean, it shows you that she's got something else in her life. It's not like she isn't just weeping. I mean, I wasn't a major Buffy fan, but I get what you're saying, this idea that there's still something else she can do, and that's what makes her such a great character.
And the fact that she doesn't just immediately disengage with her feelings.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh, yeah, well, we're
talking about four episodes here. And
yeah.
At the beginning and at the end, Yuri and Atoya are lovers living together. Even though throughout all of them, Yuri is observing Atoya with someone else in a clear, intimate clinch. And, you could have had her leave immediately and never come back to him the first time that she sees it, but that wouldn't allow her... Well, I mean, it's not particularly true to life. People need time to acknowledge it's really happening and to disengage with the fact that they want to stay, because the only thing that's actively a problem in this relationship is that Otora is going somewhere else, not that Yuri doesn't want to be with Atoya.
I like that it makes Yuri angry as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of refreshing.
Yeah.
Instead of her just turning into a puddle of tears.
Mmm.
Alright, let's see. The next thing I realized is that an inexorable conflict between Taiga and Wataru is taking shape. I see it being multi-layered, with different motivations pushing them to fight. I guess you can pick from those, or it could all be simultaneous. They could fight for the crown, or for Mew's hand. They may even fight just as Fangire and Slayer.
And, of course, you know, one-time friends.
Yeah.
But this is partly what I warned you about, you know, this, in a sense, there are parallels with Black and Shadow Moon, but it's also operating on a completely different level. I mean, 20 years can do a lot for an audience's expectations of a storyline.
Oh yeah, this is far and away superior.
Well, I mean, like, I wouldn't use the word superior, I just think it's playing to a completely different audience, because all the audience would have expected in 1987, I think it was, would be like, you know, oh, it's sad, but I just want the good guy to kick the bad guy's ass.
Yeah.
In 2008, I think Kiva was, you know, they're thinking, yeah, I want someone to get their ass kicked, but I also want a bit more sort of weeping and looking away from each other and music. Yeah.
Mm.
And boy, do we get it.
Yeah. There are two lines in this episode that that really set up some long term dynamics for Washru and Mio and Tiger. The first one is right at the beginning when Mio meets Washru and she takes his hands and says, "Hold on to me," or "Don't let me go," or something. And he's so rubbish. But when he eventually manages to hold her hands with his other hand,
that's where they need Megumi and Tiger.
He says
Nago.
Exactly the wrong thing in a way that doesn't really manifest yet, but is really going somewhere. He says, "I will become stronger for you," and she looks at him, and she. There are thoughts in there which you will see later, and they're not helpful ones. She's running away from her destiny, and he says. He doesn't mean to say this, but what she hears is, "I can take this responsibility for you."
Mm-hmm.
And that's, at her weakest moment, at her most desperate moment, she hears that someone can do it for her.
Yeah, that's...
And it's someone that she has a, like, puppy love budding crush on. Watch out!
Yeah, you've expressed your concern for where Mio is heading, I think. And Matt, you know, seems worried almost about where Wataru and Tiger are going to end up. Mio's the one I'm worried about.
Yeah.
More than any of them.
But then Tiger, a little bit later, he asks Wataru to come with him to his fiancé date.
Yes!
That's adorable.
Isn't it?
I love
the whole flipping Cyrano de Bergerac dramatic irony here with the "come on my date and meet my fiance. Oh, I'm sure she's really nice." I know you do because you already love her.
But even before we get to that scene, the fact that Tiger, like I said before, it's clear that Tiger, just as much as Wataru, thinks of that time when they were little and they made friends.
Yeah.
He asks his friend to go with him
on
his arranged marriage date.
Isn't Tiger a great character?
He wants someone to look after him.
Yeah, he comes in so late in the series, and you see him, you think, oh, this guy, the actor from the movie, who, like, barely did anything, whatever. But, yeah, I don't want to say he saves the series, but if the slump puts you off, Kiba, I think Tiger may potentially bring you back. Mm. He's such a valuable cog in this machine.
Mm. I'll let you do a couple of points, Matt, because my next thing is on the date, and we haven't got there yet.
Okay. Actually, you might be able to to continue, but I'll say this first. Like, I don't completely not care about what happens to her. It just, I'm definitely... she's very much a parallel or a... mirror, I guess it's the same thing, right? To Wataru, and it's interesting that we've been with him for the whole series and seen his growth, and she seems to be mirroring that growth in more rapid succession as far as them both going from being completely, I don't want to say silly, but kind of afraid of the world and confrontation to the point where they're embracing who they are and kind of moving forward without fear. And I feel really badly for all three of them. And she's definitely, you know, a major component. But, like, they have this terrible intertwined fate. Or it could be terrible. Or they could be mature and it could be okay. Kind of depending upon life circumstances, it's going to...
Stop being a fangirl. Be mature.
Well, I'm not saying grow that up necessarily. I mean, because I like Taiga, and I could go on about how I like him, even though he, you know, kills a person every now and then. Like, he's a really nice guy.
Oh, that thing again, huh?
He's just doing his job.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that.
How much would infinite energy have really helped humanity anyway? He was doing us a favor. It would have made us lazy.
No, that's really true.
But anyway, talking about that scene, where they go to meet for dinner or lunch or whatever. Like, the tension that I felt with Mio's worlds colliding was, like, really intense. And it was so well played. They've been doing everything. Yeah. Everything's been plotted out up to this point so well.
Yeah, that collision moment when Mio and Wataru just look at each other, like, oh no. It reminded me so much of the moment where, in the film Excalibur, which is actually a film from
allow
the 80s.
The purity of evil to guide you.
In the film Excalibur, which
someone
is about,
will get it.
Which is about the it's a retelling of the Arthurian cycle. Lancelot and Guinevere meet each other for the first time. And they look at each other and their faces fall. And it's such a clear moment of, oh, I love you. And I can't, because she's already engaged to Arthur, and Arthur is already his best friend.
Mm.
And I mean, that is, everybody knows that element of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table.
Right.
Arthur and Guinevere are married, and Guinevere and Lancelot have kind of a thing. It varies in various tellings, but in Excalibur, it's so well done, and it's so simple and obvious. And I, like, a number of times I've mentioned, even without really noticing, like I've said, Otoyo is like a knight. He's got that nobility, that chivalry. And it's a perfect setup of the king who has the queen and then the best knight pretender to the queen. It's that same triangle. And I don't know, there probably is a similar story in Japanese, like, myth history. I don't know it, but probably everyone has one. But I mean, later in these four episodes, there is a drawing of the mysterious sword from the rock. So, I mean, I don't think I'm grasping here.
Kiba's pretty heavily entrenched in Western stuff.
But it really impressed me that they know each other already. So it's not like they've just met and they've just realised their feelings. It's just that they're not meeting each other. They're meeting the problem. And it brings them up short. And it's really important. And I think it's very good. And I think it's a very simple telling of a very complex problem. Or rather, a simple problem with a lot of complex consequences.
It's almost all in the directing. One of the most impressive things about the direction in the scene where Wataru and Mio see each other on the date is the fact that it repeats the shot of them turning to see each other, and each time ends the repeat just before their eyes meet, denying you that moment for as long as is sensibly possible, i.e. three. Which drags out the tension, obviously, and mirrors the what is no doubt a feeling of "don't let this happen" that they're experiencing.
Right.
So there you go. There's a bit of directorial for you.
Just massive, massive, inescapable regret.
Yeah, like that says, it's simply expressed, which is nice.
Okay, let's see. If you want, well, now that, because you mentioned directing, I'm going to mention sound design.
Go ahead.
I loved it when, is Akira his name? The Fang Servant?
Well, I thought it was, wait, we did this last time. I thought it was Kurosaki.
Oh.
Maybe it's both.
Whoops.
Maybe it's both.
I missed
the Moose Fang guy.
Yeah, Mr. Moose.
Akira is Master's name.
Oh, that's right.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe they've got the same name. Anyway, Moose.
It happens. In Spanish, that's called a tocayo, someone whose name you share. Which, I guess, is namesake in English, isn't it? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I think tocayo sounds way better.
Yeah.
Namesake is pretty scientific. I like the romantic sound of tocayo. So there you go, listeners. A bit of Spanish for you.
All right, so Mr. Moose confronts Mio, but Taiga comes to protect her. And I would say, you know, watch it again if you didn't notice this. Listen to how heavy his footsteps are, as if his grandeur is belied by his physicality. Yet the ground pays obeisance and lauds his touch with song at every step he takes.
That's a poet.
That's very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did that catch you at all, or not really?
I didn't pick up on it consciously, but it definitely reached me. Because, I mean, that sort of stuff, you shouldn't notice consciously. I mean, it's good that you did.
Well, the average viewer, maybe.
Okay, but, well, really effective sound design shouldn't be noticed, but it should inform your understanding of the character. And I know that about the character. I just hadn't put it into those words. Now that you've said, hey, in this scene, you know, the sound of his footsteps is accentuated.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, of course.
Mm.
You know. And I knew he was very grand and important. But yeah, I hadn't put it into those words.
And I wonder if that was... I actually went back and listened to it before I wrote that down, because I thought, well, I think I heard that, but I want to make sure. So Mio's footsteps and Mr. Moose's footsteps were both pretty normal, and it is there. So that was interesting. But I wonder if that's... Is that for the audience's benefit? Is it specifically his servant's perception that we're getting an insight into, or is it just the show presenting him this way? Either way, it was effective.
All of the above. I mean, I think that sound design is rightfully a very important part of the series overall. I think we've noticed a few times more care has been taken, not just with the music, because, God, if I hear Otoya play that same tune again, oh, this is my unique song. All right, come on, I can do the whole thing.
You're not watching it week.
that's true. I'm not leaving a week between each time. But no, music aside, the use of sound effects and the use of ambient noise is pretty impressive. I noticed in one of the later episodes of Beast Four how background characters in Maldamore seem to be just mouthing their conversations.
Yeah, I've noticed that before.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've been on a film set, and I am not by any means, like, a film person. But I've been on a film set, and I've studied film, and I just thought, is it really possible to not have these people, to have these people so anti-mic'd that you can't hear what they're saying? Like, I couldn't get my head around it. Someone else who knows more about film. Yeah, somebody knows more about film than me. Please suggest how this can be done if you've watched these episodes. Because we're right next to these characters, and they seem to be having conversations and reacting to each other, but they're not saying a word. And I love the idea that they're just mouthing to each other to create an atmosphere of silence where only the conversation between Washer and Tiger, in this case,
it
matters. Yeah, yeah. Kiba comes across a lot of the time much more of a stage play. We've talked about, particularly in the movie, and some of the episodes either side of the movie, the use of traditional theatrical cues and traditional film cues, asides, all of Shizuka's stuff. Kind of, you know, breaking up some of the traditions, I think. I mean, like, I love a series like Black, you know, and I love Showa. Overall more than I love Heisei. But I do think in a series like this, in a series like this, it's a great strength just to say, now, you know what? We're trying to tell a story, but there's no reason we can't tell it with poetry.
Mm.
Music.
Mm. Yeah. And discussion of fine art, it's all highbrow, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of highbrow... Nago coming in, like, you know, Wataru is getting his heart broken, and Yuri's getting her heart broken, and the Nago bath stuff, and Megami being funny. I can't remember what she did, but it was hilarious, wherever she was. Mm. Like, really helped lighten the mood, and like, just kind of save us from just despairing at all this bad stuff happening, and I really like that. That's provided.
Those moments are the plunk,
Yeah, in the tune.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
The comic thing to set you off, like off balance a bit. Yeah.
I really like a in the scene with Mr. Moose. Mr. Moose, in fact, says he's talking about Maya as the old queen. And at that point, we don't yet know that she's alive, I don't think.
No.
But we've said it again and again that the show is so good at keeping the tension and keeping momentum. He says, blah, 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 her ironic fate.
Yeah.
Which is so blatant, because although we've been given all the clues that Maya, that's Washer's mum, and she fell in love with Otoya and so on, we haven't actually been told to acknowledge that we truly know that.
Right.
And it's just so trusting of the audience, like, you know, don't you? It's not like, aha, and of course, her fate was so ironic, like, reveal, dramatic, spoiler.
And then he falls to his knees and a single tear rolls down his cheek.
Yeah, it's not about a spoiler, it's not about keeping things going. It's about reminding you that you don't know everything yet, but you totally kind of do, but you just haven't had it officialized, and you don't know where to go from there. It's such an understated way of acknowledging that they've given us all of the clues.
It is right. Kiva is kind of designed to make the viewer feel clever, and it should because it is written with more sophistication than most writer series, particularly recent ones.
Mm.
It might be more complex than some. It might be less complex than some. Whatever. For its level of complexity, it gives the viewer just enough that they don't have to guess.
Mm.
And then they don't feel
patronized. And then it treats the viewer as if, of course you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a very hard thing for any author to do, to get on equal footing with their audience. And I think any author worth their salt will aim for that. You don't want to write over your audience's head. You don't want to write under them. You don't want to do them a disservice. And I think Kiva strikes a really good balance.
Mm.
There's certainly, I think, better written writer shows, if we're sticking within the arbitrary, you know, area of Kamen Rider. I think there's better written writer shows. But there's also a hell of a lot worse written writer shows. But more importantly, I really feel like, as Claire probably put it best, Kiva trusts us a little more than most.
Yeah, it expects us to have kept up.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
It is nice.
Can I defend my enjoyment of Taiga a little bit?
I don't think you need to. If you want to elaborate on your enjoyment of Taiga.
And it comes with a caveat, too, so here we go.
Oh, I love caveats.
So, yeah, Taiga is such a good guy in some respects. He wants to help Wataru. He believes in him. He also is so gentle with Mio at first. He wants to nurture and support her reign as queen, but he doesn't ask what she wants. He fails to truly understand about what she cares and why she is yet unwilling to act as queen. So, there's some good and bad.
See, I would go further to defend him than that, because I think that he's being quite sensible. He's acting with a lot of self-preservation, because if he acknowledges her questioning of her monarchy and her destiny, then everything comes down around him.
Mm.
His function is to be king, and if that doesn't count for her, then it doesn't count for him, and then what does he have?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking of, who was it, Henry VIII, who just went through wives like they were socks? Honestly, I was bringing that with me, like, oh, if he's king, just awaken another queen and get rid of this one. Not that I want him to do that, but he's a Fengyr, and I would expect it. but, like, I don't know, his lack of care for what she really wants, and the fact that I think he's been raised as a spoiled, get-whatever-he-wants guy.
Let's not make any assumptions.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure that's true, but we'll see.
We will.
And I think in, I don't know if it was, where she says no and walks out of the restaurant and he loses it a little bit.
He does seem very sheltered, doesn't he? That's for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean,
quite similar to Wataru. He seems outwardly more confident, but he's just as disconnected from reality.
But I also
he's really just more competent. Sorry.
I also think he's more willing to impose his will on others, whereas Wataru wouldn't want to do that to people.
Oh, well, hang on. I mean, we're skipping ahead a little, but I think the end of what's the last episode we cover in this? 36?
I think, yeah, 36.
Listeners, I think Tiger's reaction to something that happens at the end of that episode. Maybe you interpreted it differently to me.
Okay.
When he loses it, I think it's only temporary, and I think you'll see his real feelings in the end. But I mean,
I'm not sure it's fair to expect someone who was raised to be a tyrant, essentially.
Yeah, because Mia wasn't, of course.
To fully consider. He doesn't really get to consider his own either.
No.
Being king is being king. It's not exactly a changeable role.
Yeah, but it's good to be the king. and I mean that sincerely. I would think. I don't know.
I guess.
I don't know. I've read too many novels about how it's rubbish to be the king.
Yeah.
Well, you got to make the best of your situation. But anyway, before we start falling into platitudes.
Exactly, because he is the king, so he has to make the best of that. And by rejecting the idea of kingness, that isn't really making the best of it.
Okay, I'm not sure, because I also firmly believe in contentment. And if that's the right way to say it, you just have to be content with whatever your lot in life is. Unless you can change it. Which, I mean, maybe that opens the door for rejecting his kinghood, or kingship, whatever.
There's a lot of ground still to cover with Tiger.
Mm-hmm. Alright, good, because I really like him, and I want to see more. I'm just preparing myself, my heart, to be broken by him, because he's a bad guy. but I like him so much.
Is he? Serious question. Is he a bad guy?
Honestly, I don't know right now.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
I mean, he's not a magical werewolf murderer, but he is a magical snake man murderer. He kills people who are trying to progress humanity's humanity. I think it seems like for the sake of protecting the Fengar, his people. But
he also is a guy who tells his childhood friend that he can't believe a woman would turn him down, and she must just have bad taste. And let's go out for milkshakes.
Oh, sweetheart.
Yeah. So I know he's I know he's sweet. You know, but somebody was a vegetarian. I won't say who.
but he means it, doesn't he? I mean, he does. He means it, and I think that's valuable, especially in Rider. If you think of the chief villains in Kamen Rider history and how they compare to Tiger. Like, imagine all that in a bar as General Shadow and Kai from Deno and the leader of Shocker or whatever, all just hanging out together. Does Tiger not stand out a little?
Oh, he does.
As the only one who won't be drinking human tears. He just drinks water. We see it happen.
Yeah, he's watching his sodium intake.
Exactly. But no, I mean, show it aside. Even Heisei villains, like the aforementioned Kai, I mean, Wise Man and flipping whatever the one in Kuga's called. Is it Ndaguvazeba? I think.
Don't say that. Don't do that, please.
What?
Just those names are so ridiculous. Sorry.
They are, aren't they? The Overlord. Well, the Overlord in Agato is an interesting case again. But even then, like, he's so inhuman. The Overlord isn't necessarily good or evil. He's just a pragmatist. But he's not. Like, Tiger is so human, I think, and so such an original character. He occupies such an original place. Not even in Rider. In just kids' fiction in general.
Oh, man.
You've got to give him a lot of credit, because you don't generally get characters like this.
He's far more obviously caught up in circumstance, isn't
he? Yeah, you really don't. Like this, okay, I read Harry Potter, because it was the biggest deal in the world.
Ugh.
So this is for all Harry Potter fans who might be listening.
Are we going to fight again?
No, because No, because you no, because you, well, you know exactly what I'm going to say, but you know that I mean it in the best possible way.
Okay.
I had a certain expectations of Draco Malfoy, as I'm sure a lot of people did. They didn't involve leather pants, but I do kind of wish he turned out a little more like Tiger. That is the kind of characteristic.
He did.
No, I know. All right, fair play to him. You know, he did the best with what he had, I guess. It's just a shame what he was given. I wish the character had been given more. Because Tiger's given so much. He occupies such a major role in the story. All of a sudden, you know. Yeah, that idea of he's a rival, you know, with a capital R. And he's essentially a villain. He's essentially an antagonist on the opposite side to the hero. But they don't have to necessarily kill each other, you know?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Fengar and humankind can coexist.
Yeah, and maybe they will. We'll just have to keep watching.
Yes, we will. sorry, I'm not actually exacerbated. I'm mad because, like, I could be watching the show right now, but then we would be talking about it, so.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's tempting, isn't it?
Is this a good time to talk about Saga as writer? Because, I would like to point out... you're shaking your head. All right, fine.
Well, there's just lots more of them later,
okay.
That's all.
All right.
Well, I'm the boss, so I'll say this real fast. I liked how on his crest it said King and Emperor in tiny letters.
Did it?
Which, like, legitimizes Watcher being a rival for the crown or whatever. I mean, let's just put our cards on the table to quote Todd. It turns out that the queen provides the king his armor. I don't know if it's in every generation or just Maya does it or whatever, but like it's pretty clear. She probably gave it to Otoya, and I imagine it was right before her, you know, queenhood was stripped from her, and he had to do whatever to it and then get it delivered to Watcher at some point. But I don't know. I was going to say something about a CGI fight and how cool it was.
Are you okay?
Yes.
You finish your sentence, because we just dropped out.
Okay. Yeah, I was saying that, he destroyed whoever. I don't even remember who it was that he killed, but it, you know, he got out his CGI laser thing and, you know, hung them up in the sky and stroked it and they exploded or whatever.
He got black RX's flipping, what's it called, Revolcane?
Revolcane, yeah.
Yeah, that's what he got.
Yeah, which I love. It's a mixture of Revolcane and,
and
X's weapon.
Oh, okay. Rydal.
Rydal, that's right. Maybe it's Rydal Kane. anyway, I really, really enjoyed that. He's very imposing and cool looking, and he's got a neat weapon, and it's cool that he uses fencing, like actual fencing.
Yeah, it is a ridiculous finisher, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's way overblown.
Dropped a bit of a, I don't know how well this reference will go over, but when Claire and I were watching this episode, I just said that kind of move is the kind you're lucky if you can pull that off in practice mode, let alone a real fight. Do you know what I mean? That's a charge back, forward, down, back, up, forward, a full circle and seven punches all at once move, that, isn't it? Because yeah, it looks great, but you know they're going to start cutting that animation down. As the series goes on.
Yeah, I mean, like, why not...
Just like Cuba's cake, I
guess. Why not just, you know, impale them with it or wrap it around them and then do the twanging and then they're dead? Mm. Like, it's so... you could streamline that so easily.
I really like the hanging move.
It's cool, the hanging thing, yeah, because he's the king.
Threading around it.
Do you know what I quite prefer? Is if instead of stroking the handle, what he's actually doing is, like, dropping his fingers like a guillotine. That's how I see it. I prefer if he twanged the string like a violin string.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
To kill him. But hey, whatever. That's too much Saint Seiya. Every other character in Saint Seiya has attacks with strings and they twang them and it kills you.
Oh. It does mega, mega bother me.
Yeah?
When his henshin thing, where he puts the stick in the belt and pulls it and it whizzes.
Why does that bother you? It's great.
Because it's not fast enough.
Cool toy. Oh, really?
It's not, like...
You like it whizzes fast?
No, it makes me feel uncomfortable because it's not... It wouldn't work. It doesn't go enough. Like, okay. There's not enough in there to pull out, and it,
it
goes
you.
So slowly
yeah,
that it wouldn't go that slowly.
Well, we'd have to see what the toy does.
So it just makes me very uncomfortable.
If anyone out there wants to forget Patreon and all that balls, just buy us a belt.
We'll all gladly take one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need a belt, because I've played with a...
Yeah, it's one of them, isn't it?
Thingy.
Yeah, no, I know.
Diddly blade thing.
Diddly blade.
Beyblade.
Everyone loves diddly blade. Or as we call them in my youth, spinning tops.
Yeah. Victoria. Yeah, but they weren't weaponized with monsters inside of them. Hello?
No. Do we all love Sagar? I'm sorry, I know we said, Clint said this isn't the time.
He's a cutie.
He's great, isn't he?
I think so. Little weird alien snake guy.
I think have I already explained his origin on a previous episode? Probably.
Probably.
I don't know. You all don't care. If you all care, you get me on Twitter. But yeah, he does, like, Saga, it seems to come out of nowhere, but it does have, like, an official backstory. But yeah, he's cute, and I like his voice. Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, I had a question about the Japanese in the name. Is the Ark in Sagark also the mess-upification of Aku?
Yeah, it's exactly the same, and it does confuse me, because, like, I don't know what came first. Obviously, it's a portmanteau of Saga and Aku. So it's Saga Aku. But, like, yeah, I don't know. And I don't know what subtitle... Like, what subtitles are you watching, Matt? Because I assume you're watching it.
The only one, TVN.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't... How do they sub it?
It's just Sagark.
Sagark. With a C or a K?
A K.
Right, yeah, I wonder what they're going for with that. I mean, because it does probably just comes off as nonsense, doesn't it? And I must admit, I don't have a better suggestion apart from, yeah, Saga, because it's an old belt, it's an ancient belt, and Aku, because evil, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I guess he is a bad guy. I take back everything I say.
I'll give you a thing.
Go on then, please.
Saga.
Yeah.
Story.
Yep. Ark.
Evil.
Story.
No.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, tale as old as time.
Same story.
Cain and Abel. Brothers fighting, killing each other.
My brain just There's exploded.
An option, you know?
A
very old, bad story.
Saga, yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Snake Garden of Eden? No, we'll be here all night with this. That's different. Cain and Abel weren't in the Garden of Eden. Even I knew that. Went right?
Yeah, they would not have been. They were in the land of
if
Nod, which means
know.
Wandering. What? Are you making fun of me for having biblical
knowledge? No, I'm saying... No,
I was saying that you should...
I'm putting you over.
Oh, okay.
Stumbled there.
Oh, thank you.
No, I'm saying... Yeah, no, I'm saying if this guy doesn't know, no one will.
Yeah.
Judeo-Christian writer cast.
Yes.
You need to know it.
The land of Nod, east of Eden, means wandering.
So,
once again.
East of Eden, that's an RPG that I played once. I will just say... The thing I was going to say about Saga, as a writer, it's actually much quicker than what you guys just said, so you really should have let me say it. When I was a kid, purple was my favourite colour. Now, white is actually one of my favourite colours.
Hmm.
And I really like the simplicity of a white character design, especially in such a CG sort of show. I like it. It's clean and it's scary. I think white is a really effective evil colour.
I agree.
Hmm. There you go. That's all.
I will skip talking about. Well, never mind. I'm just skipping it. I'm not even going to say it. I'm not even going to say what I was going to skip because then I'm talking about it.
Check out uncommonrxsecrets.tumblr.com.
Hey.
For
yeah, maybe I'll throw a little something in there. Okay, so episode 34, 40 minutes later. Actually, you know what? I've been drinking a ton of water today, so I will be back in a minute. Would you guys like to wait for me?
Yeah.
I'm going to do a thing while you're away, because you skip what you want, but I'm not.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
right,
Say yeah one more time. Sorry, never mind. Bye. I'll be right back in a couple minutes.
I should have said it, and then he'd have laughed so much he'd wet himself, and then he'd be sorry.
Yeah.
I think what our... very polite host was going to skip was that he's talking about sex in these notes again.
Oh no.
What a rude man.
Not this but, thing.
I'm going to talk about it, but I'm not going to say sex because
you...
I didn't write that in my notes.
What do you call it in your notes, Rumpy Pumpy?
My. Yeah. No, I'm not. I didn't think it was particularly sexual. I thought it was non-metaphoric.
Maya and the toys hand jive.
Yeah. Mm. What I liked is that her hand is over his, and her other arm is around him.
I'd say
and
nothing.
She is moving his hand. She is showing him what to do. She is fully driving this interaction. She's essentially got the man's role.
Yeah.
In a traditional teaching embrace, the man would be the one on the outside moving the woman's hand. And in a traditional dating life, he is the one doing the driving. He's the one saying, oh, my fated woman, oh, you're so beautiful, blah, 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 blah. And the woman is just, like, the responsive party.
Yeah.
Not so for Maya, because she's too much of a boss. She knows what she's doing, and she knows where she wants it to go, and she's not dancing to Otoya's tune. She's asking him to play it for her.
Doesn't it make you, I don't know, she's kind of evil, huh?
No.
Can't she see he's becoming a zombie?
He's not becoming a zombie.
Well, his eyes are all sunken, he looks ill.
No, they're not yet.
Are they not?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that doesn't appear until that scene with Jiro.
Okay.
He's really not zombified.
I guess.
Until, like, that doesn't even come up at this point. In this episode, it's not even there.
I'm getting them blended together.
Yeah, where is it? It's not until...
And I mean...
It's not until somewhere in the third episode.
I think it was 35, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jiro appears to him after he sees Yuri, and he's like, hey, a-hole, what are you doing?
Yeah, and, like, we'll get to that at the time, but I really don't... I think that the death face is way overstated.
I could have gone with...
Fandom in general.
I could have gone without it, actually.
Yeah.
But, the same...
Another thing about this last thing about this episode, while we're on it, Yuri's walk of strength... The first time she watches Maya and Otoya together, I really, really dig that. She chooses to leave, and she walks, and she starts to cry, and she just is feeling her feelings and owning them, and she doesn't run to him to shout at him, she doesn't run to Maya to shout at her, she doesn't go to anyone, she's with herself, feeling her own feelings, and that is very mature.
Even, yeah, going back to the directing, they could have left that out.
They could
didn't
have.
Half the show.
They shouldn't
really
have.
They didn't.
The, like, walking. Yeah, no, it's all good.
If you're hurting or feeling betrayed, you need to feel what you are feeling. You need to know where you are, not leave it up to everybody else, because leaving things up to everybody else is what has got you into a bad feeling.
And while we're on what you should do with feelings, everyone feel what you're, like, embrace. You should just embrace, not wallow in your pity or whatever. But, yeah, I think it's very important that a lot of people in certain spheres like the idea of denying emotions. And that's kind of not a very good idea.
Yeah.
It's very unhealthy for you. All right. 34?
Yeah.
Okay.
We are only up to 34, okay.
Yeah, unbelievable, right? Let's see.
Not really.
Oh, that's right, it's us. Okay, so a watcher struggles to accept the changes in his life, embracing lost love and dealing with Kingo's return as a full and bitter member of the Blue Sky Party.
I love this.
Yeah.
Aren't you glad that I didn't warn you about this, Matt? I'm sure I probably came close, but you were like, oh yeah, Kingo's cool. Oh, he's injured, I wonder what's going to happen. And I was like... trying so hard not to say, he comes back as a member of Fear Factory. He comes back in unlaced boots and combat trousers with his hair all done up, and he's like, whoa, and cracking his neck and flipping, generally being a bastard.
Adorable.
Yeah.
Just adorable.
Yeah.
Crazy, isn't it?
This is another thing, like, as upset that I am that he's so bitter, like, I feel bad for him, and that he's just, like, concentrated on hatred and... I don't know, vengeance and whatever, putting himself above Nago and the like. Like, it's really cool to see him back, and it's so interesting and compelling to see this transformation in him. And I can't wait, or I'm excited to see the pendulum swing back the other way and him find that middle ground. Because it's good that he's growing, but it's bad that he's doing it by being mean to people.
Yeah, well, it's wonderfully balanced, I think. Because, I mean, yeah, when he was... Rock. He was going after his dream and making friends, But he was also, by his own admission and by Shima's perception, you know, kind of relying on a lot of crutches and hiding behind a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Not least of all his Kansai accent.
Right.
I love that reveal.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Like, I don't know if that was a long con, like if they really planned to do that. Maybe the actor was like, I'm really tired of talking like this.
Yeah, maybe.
But that's brilliant. Like, yeah. That's really subtle sort of characterization, I think.
And it works so well with the fact that Shima actually introduces him as if the rest of the regular cast don't know him.
Yeah, that was great.
He's just changed his hair, that's all.
But now...
But you know that Shima knows that Kengo is shy.
Yeah.
And that he's gonna... That he knows he's feeling betrayed. He knows that everything went wrong for him. He knows exactly where Kengo is emotionally. And he gives him what he needs to reintroduce himself to these people who he knows who he feels very bad about.
Wow.
By the same token, like, Kengo, now he looks down on Nago and he's mean, but also he's now able to be honest, and I'm really glad that he tells Wataru a couple of home truths, because he never would have done that before.
Mm.
He was a good friend, in inverted commas. But to be a really good friend, you've got to be honest.
Mm.
And so, yeah, like you say, Matt, he's heading towards a balance, hopefully.
And I do enjoy that his bitterness doesn't feel...
fake?
Well, kind of, but also it doesn't feel particularly dishonest, I suppose.
No, I think
like
it's
all
within his
rights. Feels to me like he's directly engaging with his pain whenever he... says, because the only things that he really says to Nago that are mean are things that Nago has said to him.
Yeah. That's true.
And the only thing that he says to Wataru that's mean is your fake friend face. Like, that is a baby crying.
But he
is a baby crying about how he thinks his friend betrayed him.
But he's also right, I think, because I think Wataru, Wataru almost has a mini arc for these couple of episodes where, like, yeah, seriously, it's about time you and Mio were honest about your emotions. And so Kengo's criticisms of his, like, nice boy attitude couldn't have come at a better time.
Mm.
He should have been honest and told Kengo he'd never play again. And
yeah.
Now
yeah.
He has a chance to make up for that
by
being honest with Mio and Tiger. Because this is going to be worse. This is worse than a guy not being able to play guitar if you're not honest about this. So, yeah, I'm all for every aspect of Kengo's... reincarnation here.
Yeah.
His remolded character.
I think, oh, go ahead, Claire. I'm sure you're going to say something substantive.
No, you go.
I like his hair.
Oh, man. He looks so good. Like,
he does.
It's great how different he looks, actually.
Yeah.
They almost could have recast him. It would have been bad, but, like, he looks so different and carries himself so differently that, but at the same time, like, with his fighting style, he still has that kind of, like, rock panache a little bit.
Yes.
It's not over the top, but it's just a little, like, you can see there's a cockiness or, like a attitude. Like, he can feel something.
Yeah.
He can feel that
rock.
He
does debut with a flying knee, doesn't he? So, yeah, he's still got that same style.
And even his new outfit is still rock.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not just, like, functional, is it?
No.
Oh, definitely
he's got
not.
The classic combat trousers,
well,
tucked
said,
into boots, and the Sonic the Hedgehog hair.
He's just traded in Visual K for new metal. He's just gone...
Yeah!
He's just... You know, he was Pink Spider, now he's Fear Factory, like I said. He's just... it's funny, he's actually kind of become more westernized, I guess.
A little bit. Do you even mean, like, the, like, with being more honest about his feelings and opinionated?
Oh, I wasn't even talking about that, but I mean, yeah, I guess rude, I suppose, is one way of putting it, for sure. Yeah. Maybe a more appropriate way of saying it is he's now, you know, got back in touch with his roots, and he's back to being a Tokyo, you know, straightforward city guy, just no BS.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can't believe...
Kengo.
It feels so good to have talked about that because, like, I needed to hear that to feel better about him. But, yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy with it.
Mm.
So cool.
But let's talk about Nago.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sure. Let's talk
because,
about that.
Because even before Kengo comes back, Washu... Oh, I don't know, I'm so happy about this episode. Because it starts with Washu making himself a cake to commemorate the fact that he lost his love.
His first heartbreak growing up.
That's pretty great.
That is so joyous.
His first heartbreak.
Because it's so true and real.
What I like is that Megumi and Shizuka are supporting him.
Yeah.
And not being like, oh, that's goofy and you shouldn't do that, you know.
They're really...
They've all...
Pulling for him.
Yeah.
But, and so is Nagu.
Yes.
And Nagu says yay. He says yay.
In his, like, silver oversized sequin blazer and giant bow tie.
Yeah. Wonderful. Just wonderful.
Yeah, and he of course, you know, invites Tiger to join in, gives him some cake, and Tiger takes it.
Yeah.
And smiles.
Oh, just, they're all such good boys.
Yeah, this is a really unusual cast of characters, you know.
But now they're in the previous episode, which I don't remember if we mentioned, but he comes in and has another bath.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Which I like, because, like I said before, I think the bath is very important for him.
Yeah.
And again, he has this other bath, and then he goes so... much more to the chilled.
Mm.
He goes to a party and says, yeah, you would never have done that. He wears a sequin coat, you would never have done that. But I like that... I think it feels like now that he's tried out this whole friendship thing, he's like, how does this work?
Well, he says, doesn't he?
I'm going to take it apart and study it. I don't get it. Let's figure it out.
He sort of admits, at the very last second, he's come to Watsu's bathroom to like help him out or whatever, but he does admit at the very last second, I like this bath.
Yeah,
which, you know, there's more to that.
It's like how I friend.
Yeah, exactly.
How I do this.
He's like, there's something about
friend good.
There's something about hanging out with someone else in a really relaxed personal atmosphere that I enjoy. What is that? Yeah, he's obviously never done it before, and it's great.
And it, like, he is now fully reborn because he's not lost his ridiculousness, like his awful... I mean, later he goes to the temple and tells God he is wrong.
Oh, no, that's so awesome.
Which is so amazing. But,
Please correct this mistake immediately.
The context of his character has completely changed. I mean, if you showed someone this episode, you would not... They would have no inkling that he was the Nagu who we saw in his first few appearances.
Yeah.
It's just, it's gone. Do you have any remaining ill feelings towards this character? Because at this point, I don't.
No, absolutely not. No, he's great.
It's such a turnaround.
He's almost transferred them to Kengo, maybe, you know, by making him his pupil and then almost essentially betraying him. And now, like, yeah, the sort of bad feelings get passed around from character to character. Like, there's one set that gets passed around between them, another gets passed around between Mio, Tiger, and Wataru. It's so interesting. And between Yuri and Jiro and Otoya. Yeah. I can't really hate any of them.
No.
Maybe Bishop.
don't talk about Bishop. Come on, man.
Well, he is, I was going to say, he is pretty much the villain, I guess. I mean, we were all saying how much we love these goofy and nuanced and changeable characters. But there always has to be, like... a heel, doesn't there?
Well, let me talk about Bishop real fast, then, if we're going to go there.
Please do.
Okay, so Bishop is actually becoming interesting to me. He isn't omniscient and vague. Real mom. He seems to hold firmly to his convictions, and he wants to put together what he perceives. So he almost serves as an audience proxy, which is made... more interesting by the fact that he is a bad guy. He is the villain, as you said. And I think that's quite a rare phenomenon. I think. And his suit is beautiful. I love how it's like, I don't know, like dead knight. It's almost like a skull or dead knight with like horns sticking out of his helmet. And it's so lovely. But no, I think
I mentioned it's a butterfly.
Yeah, butterfly. But it looks like menacing. It's a menacing butterfly, and that's cool.
Now, I thought we weren't going to mention that show. You know, I held back quite a... Talking about how brilliant the supporting cast is, I could have very easily made a comparison. An unfavorable one.
Actually, right after you said that, I thought also Papa Terror and, I don't know, like most villains in the last couple of years, very, very not good.
Well, okay, so Bishop, like, he serves a slightly different role to a character like Ryoma. in that his goal is so obvious right from the start that you can almost forget about it and just enjoy the interaction he has with other characters. For me, every time I see Roma, I'm still trying to work out, why are you doing this stuff? Whereas with Bishop, I know, you know, I can just accept, because it's so firmly established, he was born into this culture which has very strict rules. This is what he has to do. He takes great pride in it, and he hates when it's disrupted, and I can see that. And you know what really helps, particularly in comparison to Ryoma, is the guy's acting. Mm. I only noticed this with these episodes. He takes so much more care over the delivery of his lines than a lot of other characters. Specifically how they sound. I mean, God, I don't even know if it's intentional. But there are times when it seems like, I don't know, just first one that comes to my head is Mio. And it's an interesting example, of course, because the actress has played another prominent role in Kamen Rider, a very different one. And I don't know, maybe she's just a brilliant actress, but Mio, sometimes her, like, it's almost awkward watching her say her lines. Maybe that's just because she's doing a really good job of playing an awkward character. But Bishop always puts a new twist on the same old language. And you've got to listen closely sometimes, but sometimes the way he says words and the noises he sometimes makes add so much to the character, I think. But what's interesting is Claire told me that the guy who plays him is apparently a DJ.
I might be wrong. What? I just picked that up somewhere. I think I saw it on Tumblr.
That's crazy.
Well, I don't have citations.
Well, no, to preempt, you know, so it must be true then. I buy it.
It fits
perfectly. I was like, this guy is so enigmatic and weird. He must be some old stagey who flipping practices in front of the mirror for 3 hours every night. No, he's just a DJ.
So he reads people?
Yeah. He's just got a brilliant sense of crowd interaction. He's probably a performer, like, sans frontières. Like, he does whatever he has to. And he's probably a great improviser.
Can I interrupt?
Of course.
Did you love that moment when he whipped around on Maya for dramatic effect?
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
That's great, isn't it? And, like, you're watching that and you think, they're back to back. You know, I'd probably go whoosh, and then put my hand on. But he does it quicker than an anime. Do you know what I mean? It's like they actually skip frames. He does it perfectly, and so yeah, I can believe that he's a DJ or a musician or some kind of independent performer who maybe isn't always in the public eye and has quite a captive audience. Because I think he is getting more out of this character, more out of this role, than even a lot of people in Kiba. Oh, I think my main acting criticisms go to Ramon.
Poor kid.
Yeah, I know he's a kid, I know, but come on, there are good young actors out there, and it's weird, I just
blame
I struggle.
The casting director.
Yeah, I struggle a bit when he delivers his lines, I just think, you've taken me out of the show a bit, but Bishop never does, he takes it to a whole other level.
I'm going to praise one more other thing of Bishop. When he goes to attack Wataru, I love how he folds up his glasses and puts them in his pocket first.
Yeah.
It's such a cool little touch.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised, actually, that we're all sort of praising Bishop, because I don't think anyone cares about him, but...
He's cool!
I think when a unique actor like that comes along, I think you've really got to pick them up. I mean, it's a shame what happened to him in the show that must not be named, but we made such a fuss over Shishimaru... actor, God, I've forgotten his name, to my shame, in Lionmaru G, because he is so different. He talks and acts so differently. And I think that...
And with such integrity.
Yeah, he's got loads of conviction. And in the same way, Bishop seems like a really genuine character. I'd like to see some
interviews
with
that. He's not in it all the time, and you sort of forget about him when he's not there. Mm. But I think that shows that he's doing a good job.
Yeah.
Like sound direction.
Wataru's actor is brilliant. Nago's actor is obviously willing to do anything. Megumi, brilliant. Versatile. And Yuri, really versatile. You know, Jiro's actor just does, he knows what he has to do, doesn't he? In fairness, yeah. He can probably do it in his sleep. But when it comes to the speech, I think Bishop's got something really unique.
And I know we've talked about Shizuka's actress before, but she has a really great just moment in episode 36 in the beginning, and I loved it. Like, I wanted to write a ton of stuff about it, but I couldn't go there. But
is that when she realizes her work here is done?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. I know. Again, surprised they put that in, but it, I'm really glad they did.
I really hope she still.
Do you not remember? Oh, the actress. Okay, I thought you meant in the story.
No.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, yeah, she's good. She's
because
good.
Because the only thing I've seen from, like, as the only evidence I've seen of her continuing career are bikini shots. And I hope that she is given actual intellectual acting work to do as well as
I think I said, like Manners actress, like, upon reaching full-blown adulthood, yeah, she went into modelling, and I'm not about to diss modelling, but I think Shizuka's actress had quite a lot of potential, really, for someone so young.
Yeah.
Like, I don't actually know how young she is in Kiba, but I assume she's, I don't know, 16 something, 17.
Wait, and they don't hypersexualize her? Isn't that strange?
Thank God, yeah. but yeah, it's almost a shame. But yeah, we're enjoying the cast all around, I think.
Oh yeah,
it's not bad.
I would like to see or have reasoning from somebody who thinks this is a bad show, because
yeah, I'm sure there
I'm sure there are people who do, but I'd like to hear from them because I don't understand how that's possible, and even. It's just so well made and so well constructed, and everybody's really neat to watch.
A friend of mine who's a little more in tune with general writer fandom. According to him, I'm you know a bit contrary. I think is the nice way to put it, because he knows I really didn't enjoy Double, and I really did enjoy Kiba, and he said that is the complete opposite. Of the general consensus of opinion. It baffles me. Absolutely baffles me. I don't feel bad about not going on forums if they're full of people who think Double is better written than Kiva.
Yeah.
Wow!
Yeah, that's...
Come on, guy. Even you Double fans out. Come on. Really? Gaia Impact? Really? Okay. USB detected? Okay.
You have to go find your own Gaia Impact.
I'm sorry, reel me back in.
Sorry, we're going to do 35.
Strength-based approach. We love Kiva more than we hate Double.
Yes.
That's important, I think, to state.
Golda Meir would be very proud of you right now. Okay.
Oh, I have one more thing.
Oh!
Is it positive?
Yes.
Columbo?
Thank you.
All right. You're the only one who's going to get that.
Kengo saying, fake friend to Wataru.
Yeah.
Leaves Wataru with no friends.
Ooh!
Because Tiger is his brother. He doesn't know that.
Whoa, spoilers!
I'm not saying that brothers can't be friends. That would be silly.
No, I'm with you.
But there is...
I've got a brother, like, it's different.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even if you don't know each other, in literary terms, if someone is your brother, then that is before they are your friend.
Yeah, well, my brother was absent for a bit of my youth. I'm not going to meet, just suddenly get to know him all anew and then be like, we're pals. No, it's like, oh, wow, I'm finally getting to know my brother. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, as you say, Wataru doesn't know that.
Mm.
So in his mind, he still does have a friend. But as the audience...
we know that.
Yeah, what's important is the audience.
And just as... And even for Wataru, like, everything started to go wrong between them because of Mio. Well, not because of Mio, but because of the position that Mio has put in between them.
Yeah, because of the character.
Ooh,
Wataru didn't really do much to Kengo, but what he did do has resulted in... You have no friends now!
Mm.
What are you going to do?
Oh, and calling out one more instance of backshadowing, Mio kind of divided Kengo and Wataru before. And now it's going to be happening with Wataru and Taiga.
Yeah.
It's written much more like Like a proper just drama, Japanese.
Yeah.
Dorama. I think we may have said this before. And I don't know if that made it less popular. I think Kabuto suffered in
criticism. No, it did make it less popular, that's the only real criticism that I've seen of
because
Kiba.
I know
it has too many relationships.
Too many relationships. Man, I hate life. It's got too many other life forms. This is a show. I just want to see people fighting each other.
Do you want people to listen to us?
I want the right people to listen to us. Kiba has some really good choreography, particularly early on. It can really draw you in with some imaginative choreography, and it has character relationships. You can do both.
Mm.
Kabuto, I was going to say, is another example. Again, it's quite a lot like a drama because the focus is very much on, basically, you've got a cast of characters, a solid cast of characters. You don't introduce too many suddenly, you don't take away too many suddenly. And you basically mix and match. Mm-hmm. And elaborate on as many relationships within that group as you can. Along the way, some of the best fight scenes in Toku ever. I don't know why Kabuto didn't succeed in Japan. I don't know if I can imagine it might have been the directing because it's quite grey, and that's not always what you want to see on a Sunday morning, you know? If you're like me,
it had the wrong time slot.
If you've got high expectations, like me, you grew up getting up on a Sunday morning to watch Street Sharks, real high-level programming, colourful stuff, really brilliant animation.
Sorry, I'm allergic to lies.
Alright, I guess we're going to edit that out. Never mind.
No, you made
it funny.
That's a keeper.
Way to go, Master Splinter. I'm sorry if I just killed half our audience by like making fun of people who don't. I like good fight scenes. That's why I love Kabuto.
No.
But I think that Kamen Rider may be in sort of a rut where it's relying too much on the simple fact that there is action on the screen and not the meaning of the action. Why are these characters fighting? What do they think of each other? That's why I watch Bruce Lee movies.
No, I'm going to join you and isolate the rest of everybody else, shoo them away, because you know it's a fighting show going in, so you expect for there to be fighting. That's par for the course. What's engaging you? What's keeping you there besides the fighting? Because I love some of the fights here. I didn't make a note about it, but I was thinking, I remember it, the Doga Hammer with the, Emperor form, seeing that was really cool.
It wasn't it?
Like, but I like those things as that's the sprinkling on my, whatever joyous celebratory mood you have. That's cool, but if there's no plot, suits aren't going to keep me there. Suits are just a bonus.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're all such inherent ingredients in the genre, let alone in the show.
Right, so you shouldn't laud the fact that there are doorknobs and actors and they're wearing clothes. Well, they have to be.
Exactly.
How well those things are all executed is important. The choreography should be good, etc. But it's more of a balancing act, and I think the emphasis needs to be the story should carry everything else.
Because I don't know anybody. I know a couple of people who love martial arts cinema. I have one friend in particular who is nuts about martial arts cinema, follows every martial arts superstar, you know, living or dead, ancient and new, famous and obscure. And even they, very easy to please. Very easy to please. Some of the movies they've shown. Even they need to know why someone's punching someone. In a really simple sense, they will not enjoy a fight as much if there's no emotional context. And this is someone who laughs uproariously when people get kicked in the nuts. Like, in a sense, their standards are very low, by their own admission. But also, I can see it, that they enjoy it so much more when it's been built up to, when there's meaning, and when there's consequences as well. Hey, don't just go around machine gunning Kurokages, okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Don't do that. That's nice.
Anyway, I mean, but I really, that's the kind of thing that I really love to hear other fans' opinions on. Because obviously not everybody watches these shows in the same way. But I find it really hard to just watch the fight scenes.
Yeah. And if there's anybody out there who prefers the show more, or dislikes the show because the fight scenes aren't good enough, or dislikes the fact that there's too much story and relationship drama, tell us, I don't know, give us a fuller explanation of that, because we're interested to hear.
I was worried what he was going to say.
Legitimately. I was going to say we should move on to 35.
Yeah, halfway, all right. Yeah. We haven't been talking for 2 days.
Nago loses Ixa to Kengo. Otoya rejects Yuri for the sake of protecting the music in everyone's heart. And Wataru resolves to find his own music and make people happy. Claire, I want to call back to something you've said before. Otoya really is a grand gesture kind of guy.
Yeah.
And the details don't really matter to him. The fact that he's basically cheating on his, you know, lover with Maya because of the proximity and the intimacy that they're sharing doesn't occur to him and isn't a big deal to him because he's doing something, like, one, he's doing something narcissistic and self-serving, which is building himself the violin he deserves, that his genius deserves, and two, you know, when he's imbuing it with the prayer, he's doing it for everybody else. So I guess it doesn't matter to him, or it justifies him doing whatever he had to do to Yuri for the sake of the prayer.
Yeah, the prayer seemed quite false to me, actually.
His own? Or the fact that it had to be?
His prayer to protect the music in everyone, or whatever it was.
Right.
I bought it before, but in that scene, it just doesn't seem something that's applicable to the person he is at that point. And maybe that makes it better. Like, maybe there are certain principles that people can hold even if they're not actually feeling them at that time. But I didn't expect it to be that community minded, I guess. Because it came at such a selfish moment, like you say.
Yeah, and maybe that's just the, I don't know, the mystery that is Otoya, Kerr, and I. I have weird things to say. Not weird things to say about him, but just he's so, like, you're right, he is so contradictory. Like, he has all these good qualities and bad qualities, and it's I don't know, kind of too bad. But he's just, he's a man, he's a human, he's a person, and he's like a real, I mean, the characters in this show, you know, not only are Digimon real, but also the characters in this show are real, you know? it's just so legitimate. You can see that sort of thing happening, even though it's ironic that he's making that prayer at the time, or that's in his heart. It's very believable.
Yeah, it is. Let's talk about Corpse Face.
Okay, go ahead.
Is that what we're calling him then?
No, because see, when I was talking to Sono and Jules, which I still haven't edited. It's because it's got spoilers in, and so it seems sensible almost to wait until the spoiler moment has passed.
Yeah, I kind of thought about that. It makes sense.
Yeah. And Jules was saying that, I don't think I'm misrepresenting her right now, but the impression that I got was that her opinion is that Yuri and Otoya is basically the 80s OTP, and Maya magicked Otoya away from that, and that's shown through this weird makeup, death face makeup. Mm. But I completely disagree. I said that at the time.
I can see your point.
But I'm saying it again now because, like, to start with, it seems, you know, fair enough. But it doesn't appear until all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? If it was gradual...
It's been such a build-up, this relationship has been such meeting after meeting, circumstance after circumstance. Interaction after interaction, they do suit each other, and they have been attracted to each other so
I'd
long.
I'd much and rather believe that.
It's
yeah.
not until they work really hard on the violin that this happens to this face. And I'm much more prepared to believe that the intense work on the violin, there's some magic in that. And that, like, because we know the Bloody Rose is magic.
Right.
Because it vibrates with when a Fangar is around and it cracks when Watcher is feeling bad. So I really don't read Maya's Fangar possession of Otoya. Not really, I didn't really read it as a real thing at all. Well, but I especially don't read it as a romantic thing.
So
I don't think that she has forced him to fall in love with her through her vampire magics.
I don't want Wataru to be born of that kind of relationship.
No,
and
really.
I don't think he's supposed to have been.
No.
And in another sense, I mean, obviously this is a rewatch. And before going in, I just had it in my head. I just thought, well, as I remember it, it's quite an original story of how, sometimes you can just change your mind.
Mm.
Otoya just fell in love with someone new. I think the way I put it on an earlier episode was he thought he'd found the best, most exquisite music he could, but then he heard a better tune.
Just because you admire someone, it doesn't mean you have to be in love with them.
Yeah, but I mean, there is definitely something to be said for the fact that Maya is literally magic.
Yeah.
You know.
But then, later in the episode, and I honestly do think this is on purpose, like, I don't want to read the relationship that way, but I also actually don't read it that way. And I think it's on purpose because later in the episode, the, who we haven't mentioned at all yet, which is weird, but the Fangar who's having powers transferred into her. By the creepy scientist guy.
Yeah, I'll tell you why we haven't mentioned it. It's because, as I said when we saw it at the time, by the way, we don't know what kind of animal she's meant to be.
I think it's a mantis.
Claire thinks it's a mantis.
I thought it was a mushroom, but that's not an animal, okay. Is it?
She, no.
Well, isn't there like a rose fang?
Oh, my God.
Okay, the reason we didn't think of it is because, as I said at the time, this is a plot from Blade or something. It does feel kind of out of place. And I said that, actually, this idea of man-made monsters in general seems out of place in Heisei, where I'm much more used to mysticism and sort of more cosmic sci-fi rather than horrible nitty-gritty cyborgs on lab tables.
Yeah.
And, so Kara.
But, we come back to her, and she's had loads of guys put in her, and she's got loads and loads of power, and she's freaking out, and then she also has death face makeup on. It's not identical, but it is extremely similar. And the scientist says, your ugliness is proof of your strength. And Otoya is making his masterpiece. And
interesting catch there.
Wow.
On the one hand, it's really interesting to see Otoya unhandsome. Because I don't really think of him as a handsome person in general, but he thinks of himself as a handsome person, and he addresses the world as if he were a handsome person.
I think of him as the Japanese Austin Powers.
Ooh, I can totally
handsome
see that.
Handsome or not handsome?
Not handsome. In his physique, but possessed of, like, some idea of handsomeness.
Mojo. He's got mojo.
Yeah, but he's not actually attractive. He's proper thinks he is,
but
and everyone around him
but
does.
But even
well.
Someone who was super handsome, or someone who had all of the mojo, he doesn't because he's not in charge. Like I said earlier, Maya is in charge of where the relationship is going. She is...
Because she's an evil monster.
No, not because she's an evil monster, because she's just got more presence.
Yeah.
She won't put up with the nonsense. She won't let Otoya goof around within their relationship. And I see the creepy makeup as just a manifestation of what has happened to him rather than something that is happening to him.
It is very sudden, isn't it? It's almost like they were experimenting. Like,
it is.
Someone in makeup was like, let's just give this a go.
But Jiro is the one who sees him that way, and Jiro is a real monster, and it's about Yuri, and they've both been, and just, there's too much around that sudden weird makeup for me to believe that all it is just Maya has bewitched him.
I think, it's possible that, like, I like the connection that you brought up between him and Monster Lady, about them having that look when they're attaining their, you know, greatest strength or whatever. I think it's a really great point because in my notes I have that he's completely fixated on working on the violin, and like Maya has to tell him to slow down. And I kind of thought that might have been explicitly sexual. Hey, you know, sometimes you
are terrible.
Different speeds. Never mind.
Hi, kid.
Well, I'm just once again, this is addressing. Never mind. We will continue. No, like he was so into what he was doing that I don't think he was eating or drinking or sleeping or anything. I think he was just so fixated on himself and on, you know, not rotting, on forging this masterpiece to measure up to his greatness. That
it is about being good enough for his amazingness.
Yeah.
That's the explicit reason that he needs to make a violin, so something can be worthy of him.
And I mean, like, Maya gets just as messed up by the whole experience, too, as we see.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if I can just accept it as Toya has fallen into some kind of trap, because they're both punished.
Mm. And she's so honest with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it hard to judge Maya, I have to admit.
Yeah, I really like her. She's a very interesting character.
Mm. Especially when we find out the guy she's actually meant to be with.
No.
Oh my. Well, I guess that'll be the last thing we address. But yeah.
Okay. I guess. Let's see. I don't even know if I want to go over these. Yeah, I'll go real fast, and if you guys have anything to say, you can chime in.
Okay.
Let's see. Well, we've addressed one thing, that things are all changing, and that's really great to see. So, maybe 35 solidifies some of that, like with Yuri and Jiro meeting, and Jiro going to Itoya and saying, you know, you're a big jerk, and all that stuff. And then Wataru really starts to show his growth here. He stands up to Jiro when he's in his house all of a sudden, you know, magically. And he's honest with Taiga, and he makes Bloody Rose his own by playing the song. And, like, I don't want that to sound wrong. Even when I typed it, I thought, well, makes it his own. Like, he's not mastering it or showing that he's better than it or it belongs to him. It's like, it shows, it's almost like a mark of maturity that he can handle it.
Well, he starts finding his own music, his whole shit.
Yeah.
He becomes the equal to his parents.
Yeah.
Like, he becomes an adult, because Maya says, my soul is in this and your soul is in this.
Mm.
And then Wataru self-actualizes enough that he can mend it. That's basically, thou art a man.
Yeah, and I actually did see him being able to repair Bloody Rose physically as a sign that he can make something that rivals or is equal to Bloody Rose, because he repaired it perfectly.
Yeah.
What was cool was because he had been maturing up to this point, when he fixed it, it wasn't a big deal to him. Because, you know, when you're a kid, certain things seem like they're really important or really scary or daunting. And then when you're an adult and you actually have to do them, it's kind of just another thing that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. That's okay. You're growing. And the other challenges will come along. And you deal with those, and you just keep going and going, and it's all very cyclical, how you grow up. So I love that that's reflected here.
Yeah.
And then my last kind of throwaway line is, seeing Kanda get his comeuppance was actually not satisfying, even though I had initially enjoyed the idea of watching Taiga invest in him. That was, like, really goth, though, wasn't it?
You just say, invest in him. That just reminded me of my new favorite Kiva character, which is when you have a tiger investing in someone, and for whatever reason Mr. Moose isn't there, this other guy.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, the other guy. Okay? I don't know if you remember this scene, Matt, but Claire and I really laughed it up about it. It's just really one tiny scene where, you know, Tiger has a guy with him from his office.
Right.
And the guy says, shall we eliminate him?
They're like, do you think we should, you know,
murder
him?
Yeah.
He seems really new. Like,
yeah,
He's been newly promoted, so he's just not really...
Well,
I expect Tiger to say, use the metaphor when we're in public. But Tiger's just like, yeah, we're going to kill him. But I love this guy because he's just so unassuming looking. And I like to imagine that he thought he was working for a completely normal company. And he's really bored. And he's like, oh, man, my career's going nowhere. Do you know what? I'd be better off on Job Seekers. But then he somehow gets promoted and finds out that actually his boss is going around killing people. And he's like, oh, wow. Oh, cool. Oh, it's like The Sopranos or something. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah,
and he says, but it turns out he's a fan guy. I just wanted him to be just a normal guy.
I figured he was a fan guy. I think Mr. Moose got Doga hammered.
He'd already been killed by
him. Yeah, that's why this guy got promoted.
Okay. He got Doga flipping crocade.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, which I liked that. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, well, God, I'm just glad to see a new Fever finisher, to be honest. I'm getting a bit... We still haven't seen the gun, have we?
No, we have not.
We've only seen the sword once.
I was actually just thinking about that today. No gun yet.
We've only seen the rocket sword. I can't imagine that. But do you like Tatslot anymore now, Matt?
Oh, yeah, I like him. He's definitely grown on me.
Okay. He's part of the gang now.
Oh, yeah, he's a great little guy. Like, Once Kiva accepted him, I was like, you know what, Tatslot, you're okay with me.
Exactly. That's all you need. By the way, I realized who Kiba is and why I like him.
Who?
He's Tachibana Tobe.
Wait. Do you mean thematically or?
Just well, in every way, because I mean
he's not like voiced by him or anything.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to get really excited, but no, he is Tachibana Tobe. You're right.
And especially manga-wise, because he was literally his butler.
Oh, my goodness, that's so good. Yeah, everybody. Tachibana Tobe, if you don't know, he's from the original Kamen Rider, and he's awesome.
Pretty much all, well, not all of them, but like up to Stronger.
Right.
Because I was watching something Showa, I can't remember, I think it might have been Stronger. And I was watching Tobe, and I thought, who does this guy remind me of? Because he's got such gravitas and such dignity, but he's also a complete goof. He can do it all. And, like, he shouldn't be involved in this situation. He should be at home. He should be maybe texting Stronger, saying, oh, you should do this. Kick him. But he gets involved anyway, and that's just like Kiba.
He's got a real fatherly aspect, but he definitely defers to every writer because they're the writer.
I mean, we really...
It's an interesting power dynamic.
Yeah, and we really enjoy the moments when Kiba fights, and I think very wisely, they're very rare.
Yeah.
But we've all agreed that they're like highlights. They always make us smile when Kibat challenges a Fangire to keep up with his speed or catches their sword in his mouth in the first episode. And that, yeah, it just put me in mind of this old guy who defers to you, he's always there for you. And if he needs to tell you off, he will.
Oh yeah, I'm just thinking.
Tobe. Sorry, go on.
I'm just thinking when you mentioned Tobe that. Like after Ichimonji loses to that aardvark or whatever.
That's it. I was gonna say he gives Hayato what for, doesn't he? One episode.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's like he's like, if you don't keep fighting, Goro might die because he has hope from the rider, and the rider needs to come through and conquer this guy. And that reminds me a lot of what Kivat said to Wataru.
Exactly.
Remember, boy. Like, why are you doing this,
boy? Yeah, exactly. So there you go, people. Fan art. Put those two together at a noodle stand or something, having a drink together. Drink of water and a bowl of noodles. That's what I want to see.
Alright, wow, that was fun. Alright, we should move on to 36.
No, I have more to say.
Oh my goodness.
After Claire says what she has to say.
Thank you. No, I just want to say loads about how cool Maya is, because I really think she's brilliant.
Okay.
Because Megumi has not really been getting much time.
No.
Yuri's not been getting that much. I think she has a strong, I wouldn't say stance, because it's not active, but anyway, Maya is really getting a spotlight, and she's really marvellous. Like, she starts this episode she's not offended at all by the fact that this new queen is basically coming to see her to say, I really don't fancy your son. Because she doesn't know that she fancies her other son.
No.
But a lot of parents would be offended that someone didn't want to marry their kid.
Mm.
And Maya's just completely not. She just addresses it with all seriousness. She doesn't even mention that.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she probably wants the best for her kids. But, and the way she talks about her relationship with Otoya is just so... I keep saying boss, but it is just, she's yeah. such a boss. She says, I made that decision to love him,
mm-hmm.
to fall in love with him. It was active, but she did that. It wasn't like Tristan and Isolde or something.
Yeah, it wasn't an accident. She wasn't made to.
And she says, I don't regret it, but it's painful.
Yeah, that was
That's
awesome.
That's like the strongest thing ever.
Yeah.
I don't regret it. But it's painful. That's so
Again, quite
true
a,
life.
Quite a rare line for any character.
Like, all the best women's stories will have that. Like, all the best anyone's stories. But yeah, like, that is a really strong... Like, I just read the other weekend...
Rare for that to be explicit,
well, it
though.
Is quite rare.
Okay.
But
the
other weekend, I read I Capture the Castle.
Yeah.
Which is... I didn't think it would be good because I have internalized misogyny still. Great. We all do. But no, it's
and
tremendous.
And because the cover makes it look like it's well, from it 1998 or something.
Cover. But no, I Capture the Castle is a coming-of-age story about a girl who lives with her immediate family in a mouldering old castle. And they're very, very poor. But there's love mix-ups. Eventually. I'm not doing it justice.
And it's actually from the 50s or something, isn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's tremendous. But I don't regret it, but it's painful, is what the main character, who is the narrative voice as well, because it's written as a diary, that's what she grows into. And it's so gradual and so enlarging. You really do see her grow into the idea that things can be terrible and hurt, but be worth it and make you better.
Mm.
And that's just such a good way to live, with the idea that even things that are painful are still a part of the amazing fact that you are alive.
Mm.
I mean, she just died, but Maya...
Angelou.
Yeah. I just stopped because she's also called Maya. Like, snapped.
I thought you'd just forgotten her name.
No, I just realised they have the same name. But that is a really strong theme in her work, and it's something that is incredibly helpful to so many people, and you should read both of these things if any element of Kiva is resonating with you.
I
read any work
stars.
By Maya Angelou and read I Capture the Castle and watch this show over and over. Because if you can stand up with your pain, then you can't be beaten. I mean, look at Maya. She's in a cave.
Mm.
And but she's so regal still. Bishop comes and she just sits up straight and she smiles a little bit because she knows he can't beat her because she
Bishop
is
throws. Bishop throws some dust. Which is obviously an aggressive thing.
Yeah.
He'd probably like to hit her, but instead he expresses it by just throwing dust in the opposite direction.
Mm.
That's a man who still respects authority.
Yeah. and when Wataru and Tiger have their little discussion about how, no, I'm coming with you. Because I also like Mia.
Oh, that was great.
And Tiger takes his hand and puts it in his hand. Nothing in that scene belongs to Otoya. Nothing. That is entirely Maya. That is Maya's sons, with her good points, being amazing.
That's true.
That is fully her. And it's so strong and brave and kind and good. That's like the best of Wataru and the best of Tiger, and it
actually,
all comes from
that
Maya.
That is a very good point, because we sort of waxed lyrical much earlier episodes about how important the bonds between parents and children are. None of us have really pointed out, and obviously we'll get to him, but Tiger takes much more after his mother. That is an explicit part of his character.
Mm.
Tiger is basically the same as his mother. He maybe tries to be like his dad. My opinion, it doesn't work.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, basically anything cool Tiger does, he learned from her.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe some other people as well. But yeah, definitely in regards to the genetics, you know, he takes after Maya.
Yeah. And then just at the end, like, when she says that how much she wants to see Wataru.
Oh, yeah.
I can't help but notice
that
she breaks down and talks about her son as, well, her waters break. The sky starts raining and the cave...
Nice. Like, she's in a cave.
That's total motherhood symbolism.
Yeah, man. She's in a cave.
I can't not see it.
Uh-huh. Cave.
Yeah, stop.
All right. No, I'm with you.
I don't know if it was active thinking, but it's there and I can't not see it.
Isn't this around the time when all the dudes are trying to get to grips with a sword as well? The symbolism's flying thick and fast.
I really did like that though.
Huh?
The sword in the wall. Like, I can't help it. The Arthur stuff for me, just immediately I'm there.
I remember the first time I watched this series, I hated it, because I just immediately thought, oh, alright, I'll buy the new toy, just get it out of my face.
It's like, it came out the wall!
Yeah, I know. No, but I actually quite like the role that they you know, they do fit the sword into the story, so I'm fine with it.
And the last thing is that Kiva, Emperor Kiva, playing a violin.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yes.
That's just a very, very nice thing to look at.
See, we like cool action stuff too.
Well, it's because it's everything all at once.
Yeah. So, 36.
Yeah, done.
Ooh.
Wow.
We can do it!
I like how I feel like I just blather on for a long time and then you say something like super cool. At the end.
I feel like we blather too, don't we?
Okay, so 36, Mio changes her... No, she doesn't change. She shares. She shares her true feelings with Taiga and Wataru. Taiga's facade is cracking, and Wataru shows he has the courage to face conflict head-on as himself.
Wow.
So, this is after...
The series could just end here, couldn't it?
Honestly, it could. This is the second time where I think the series could have ended. I don't remember what the first time was now, but I'm pretty sure I pointed it out when it happened, a couple episodes ago. Which is great, because, like I said, there's like this cycle that keeps happening. I'm going to skip ahead to my talking points, and then we can go back to whatever we need to. Besides, you know, the fun looking at the suits, the fight in the fountain, and the sword, which I love, especially because he's a knight, basically, and it all works together for that, which I enjoy particularly. I thought about the toy aspect, honestly, but actually not.
Did you clock in the next episode preview how the sword works?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's great. Now, that's one of the things that saves it for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Especially, you don't see in the preview the visual effect that happens, actually, when he does it. For whatever reason, it's got an added CG visual effect, which completely makes it for me.
Okay, well,
it's fun. Like, if you're going to introduce a thing that I don't like, you know, if you can sort of take it to the next level of ridiculous, cool. And like I said, it's a believable part of the equation, because Kiva, or Yamino Kiva, as they're calling it officially, you know, the Kiva of Darkness, that's the armor. It only makes sense to have a weapon.
Right.
Yeah.
To complement it, and that is the Zanbat sword.
Yeah, which
is a pun that I probably won't bother explaining, so move on.
Okay.
You can find that stuff out for yourself.
Alright, so let's see. Oh, yeah. This is my substantive note. Wataru Kurenai is transforming. He is transforming. He's grown so much. I hope his journey thus far is repeated in the remainder of the show so he can face analogs of his previous challenges.
Doesn't he? Sorry.
Well, even more. Like, I want to see him
the
deal with Otoya's sins, like struggling with his, or struggle with his calling to fight and kill Fangire, etc.
He is Otoya's sin.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Hey there.
But, like, it's cool because
we've
already seen the start a little bit with the way he talked to his neighbors at the beginning of the episode and apologized to them.
Yeah.
Like, he was so direct and graceful and, like, apologetic and really honest. Not, he wasn't scared of him. It was just like, hey, you know what? He presented himself as an equal and he apologized and owned the fact that he was bothering them a little bit with his music. And then they all backpedaled because they realized he was, maybe they were overreacting a little bit.
But it, I really think that's so good to show, because honesty and humility, if you do those, then that affects other people. It's not just something that you're giving up. It's something you're gaining, because people will respond to it in kind. People, even if they seem scary, they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
They have the ability to form connections with you or to be kind to you, and if you can give just enough to them, they're probably going to be just as nice right back. And it's very hard to believe if you don't know it yet. But if you can try it and learn to do that, then you will reap the rewards. That's real life.
Yeah. Did I say what great book ending the neighbors scene was?
A little bit.
You guys picked up on that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, how did the series start, you know?
Yeah, with Shizuka defending him, and then she was sad this time because she couldn't.
And I love bookending. I love, especially after such a relatively long time in the series, revisiting a situation and just showing explicitly how much a character has changed. It's simple in one sense, but I think for a show like this, it's perfect.
Mm.
And I know that, you know, that might not be able to put it into words, but on some level, the kids that this show is aimed at will completely get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Brilliant.
Claire, I know you pointed out that Taiga has a lot of Maya's good qualities. What did you say? His or her best qualities and Watcher's best qualities?
You said Watcher and Taiga both.
Yeah, the best of Watcher and Taiga both is directly from the best of Maya.
Well, interestingly, I made a direct opposite or an equal opposite comparison.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I said that Taiga, like, this was kind of referencing back when Maya had told Otoya that humans are monsters, and he just kind of agreed with her, probably because, he just agreed with her. But it's interesting because Taiga, who seems mostly okay with humans, can be as bad a guy as the worst elements of Otoya and Nago combined. Taiga seemed really nice at first, but he is proving what a monster he is to some extent. And actually, after talking with you guys about it, I'm open to seeing the change, and especially with the clue that maybe that's from his father, from King, that
his
he's
reaction,
trying to emulate him, and I really want to see that borne out.
Let me revisit my point about his reaction to Mio telling Wataru she wants him. It is just sadness.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know how you interpreted it, Matt, but it wasn't. I don't think, like, I know what happens, but even, like, making myself forget, I don't think Tiger's going to act on it. I don't think he's going to do anything bad as a result of this. It's not anger he's feeling.
Yeah, I would say that his reaction in the restaurant after Mio leaves is angry. And
that's the king talking.
And entitled. But that's what I'm saying. He is reacting according to impersonal rules that have been applied to him as well. He doesn't say, she belongs to me.
Mm.
He says,
the queen
belongs to the king.
Hmm.
And he belongs to the king.
Yeah.
That's patriarchy.
They could.
Teaching boys that they deserve girls.
I know, that's
personal.
Bad.
Yeah, it is bad. It's very bad. But that it's not actually real is also shown.
Yeah, because...
And that it's not real is very, very important for children to learn, because otherwise they murder people.
commit more subtle crimes.
Yeah.
You see Tiger say, "Unforgivable," to no one in particular, after Mio's left.
Yeah.
You see him say, "The queen belongs to the king." But then, third time's the charm, the last thing you see is him dehension. You see his human face. He casts aside the armour of the king, the reserve armour of the king, even. And he just looks a bit deflated and sad.
Because when he's angry, he doesn't yet know that it's Washer. It's not. Right. It's really not personal. No. Because he doesn't really know Mio. He fancies her, maybe, and he knows he's supposed to marry her, but it's not actually...
Matt, you don't think he's going to kill Washer, do you?
It's not a true, intimate reaction. It's a socialized reaction. And that is bad, and that is very dangerous. But that it's not true for him, and that he can escape it, is really quite a thing.
And I think he's gonna. Matt, do you think Tiger is gonna try and kill Washer and steal Mio?
I mean,
because
he kind of.
They could.
He kind of.
Go on.
Maybe I'm. Am I thinking? I mean, I watched episode 37 because I just couldn't get enough. And spoilers. He kind of tries to do something like that, but it isn't. He kind of just takes advantage of a situation. It isn't like he sends minions to do it, which he totally could, because he's the king. So I guess...
It's just, they could have ended the episode with him in costume, you know, saying, "Unforgivable.
Yeah.
I am Saga. Mm. I am a faceless warrior." Mm. But, you know, they just show him looking resigned to his fate with his back to them, hidden away.
Yeah, if it's... taking advantage of a situation that provides him the opportunity to react in the way that he is supposed to, then, like, on the one hand, that's very bad, but on the other hand, that provides the opportunity to grow past that weakness, that's being influenced, that's being easily influenced, and if someone is that weak, then they can get stronger. But if someone is strong enough to decide they're going to actively try to kill someone or punish someone, then that is much less of a recoverable position, I think.
Very interesting.
I mean, I don't think he's spotless or anything. I think he's being a very naughty boy, and I don't think that, you know...
Naughty boy.
I don't hope that he gets the girl.
You do?
No, we don't.
Oh, you don't. Don't? Okay, I'm sorry. I totally misheard that.
I don't have anything else to say about Tiger's character yet. Forgive me for going on a bit of a bonus tangent. How did you feel about the fact he's able to summon Quetzalcoatl whenever he feels like it?
Oh, I loved it. Honestly, I really love it.
At least it's a snake, I guess.
Yeah.
All right.
It surprisingly made me happy, because I usually get really bugged at stuff like that. But the fact that this is, like, before the era of that stuff...
I'm not a fan of giant fights in Kamen Rider. I think that should be left to Senta.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I agree totally. Which is funny. I was going to ask you what you guys thought of the return of CGI Bataru.
Well, I mean, it's a series debut, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess. But, you know, boy plus bat plus dragon plus violin equals bird. I mean, it's just maths, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just willing to just let it be like, yeah, you know.
Like
that's
the sword.
What's happening. I'm up for it.
I am willing to accept it.
But just because, not so much on its own strengths, because if it was just a Toku thing, then I'd be like, meh. But it really does remind me of Castlevania. And I like Castlevania.
Oh, the monsters, particularly, like
coming
Dawn
with
of Sorrow.
Sword as well.
Particularly Dawn of Sorrow designs, though, I think the
but there was the big chandelier thing from that chef guy.
Yeah, you're right, that was
the chef. And now there's this bizarre snake and
was
strange
I want to whip him. I want to whip him. Okay, I just realized something. The Quetzalcoatl he summons, right?
Yes.
Officially, that's actually named Kukulcan, which Quetzalcoatl is the god's Aztec name.
Okay.
Kukulcan is it a much more ancient name for the same god. From which culture, Claire? Pre-Aztec?
I don't know.
Maya.
Maya.
Oh!
Dun, dun, dun!
Hashtag, it's all connected.
Yeah! Oh, man. Anyway, so, I mean, you know, that aside, I don't know if that was intended. What other possible reason can there be? It's a snake, it's from Maya culture, I don't know.
I don't know, it's cool. Whatever it is, it's cool.
Yeah. Oh, he's got another one as well. He's got two Pokemon.
Oh, I was hoping he just had more of them.
Not a bad more Kukulcans.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's only got the one, but he's got one more. I think he hasn't used it. No, he hasn't used it yet. We would have mentioned it.
Not so much Pokemon, so much for me, at least.
I think Pokemon
in the moment of
Really?
Like the fully CG battle. Mm-hmm. That very much reminded me of Final Fantasy X with this.
Oh yes, yeah, exactly. It's like an RPG summon monster. Yeah.
Which I liked it. I just
He's got an even better one later, and it is cute as a button.
Oh, good. I don't know why, but I accepted it. I thought, that's legitimate to me for some reason. So.
Yeah.
Let's see. My last point or talking point was going to be about Abel. I will honor you, Todd, by saying it that way.
Abel. Ding dong. Ridiculous.
Did the Maya Otoya scandal break out and then she went away and, like, that's why there were the rumors of the king who was hiding among
the human
family.
It gives me this image
family.
Of a castle. Maybe. Someone running out of a castle in midnight, or like the Fangaia castle. And they all live in the same village. Oh, have you heard the news? Who knows, maybe they did.
Anyway, I just thought that was kind of funny, because it kind of legitimizes what could have been just a red herring to make us... Well, just a red herring about Mitsuhide. But anyway... I thought that was cool. Oh, but yeah, the last thing we're going to mention, I forgot, and then we should get going after this, is back in 1986, Maya is shocked by the return of the king who walks into Kessel.
Oh, I thought we'd get away without mentioning him.
Who walks into Castle Duran carrying Zanbat and declares that Taga right. will be a mighty king, so enemies beware.
Hey! Okay.
I don't know if you'd sing it quite like that, to be honest.
He's a bit more of the usual sort of moment. No, all right. This OC cosplayer here. Yeah. This I was going to cosplay Dante, but I thought I could do it better than Capcom, and I made up my own guy.
Went to B&Q, got a bunch of chains.
He's called Dark Dante, and he is the same as Dante, except he's three quarters demon.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
What a prick. There's a point in a series like this. Like, we already mentioned this. Mm. Checkmate 4. We're waiting for the king to be introduced.
Right.
Right? And you're in two minds. You're either, it's going to be large, big and scary and super imposing and it's the biggest bossiest thing. Or they're going to do something kind of unusual and weird. And he'll be like a chubby businessman. And it'll be kind of strange. Or it'll be like a mega twist and turn out that Wataru and Taiga are both the king somehow. They're two halves of the whole, right? But I wasn't expecting in a million years just flipping... What is he? Is he?
A big nerd.
He's not a rock star. He thinks he is when he looks in the mirror. He thinks he's a rock star.
He's Kengo gone wild.
He's got... Yeah. That's it. Oh, man, what a twist. Time travel. He's got his sword chained to his back. We're meant to hate this guy.
Yeah.
And he doesn't look very 80s. But he does look like somebody who is trying desperately to cling to some sort of image and use that to maybe intimidate people or whatever. So, we were talking about where's the real villain. I guess it's this guy, because he's obviously meant to provoke me. Did you like him, Matt? What do you think of this film?
Oh.
I know, people think he's cool as hell.
No, when I saw him, I was shocked. I thought, like, oh, I guess they're going for a rock thing, which doesn't really make sense, given the context of everything else.
How did 80s, they ever have a baby?
Yeah, I know. All his chains are getting in the way.
Not exciting.
No.
Wow.
It's be a serious turn off as well. His room. You think? Look at how he dresses. What do you think his bedroom looks like?
PVC sheets, probably.
Ah, he's got a poster that he's had since he was a kid, and it's just of a wizard stood on a cliff, and that's it. Just a wizard on a cliff. He doesn't even remember where he got it.
Well, like a big-breasted woman it's being cooler. Crucified.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's cool, though, because it's got the signature of the artist on it. It's probably worth something, I don't know.
Other than I didn't like him, and, you know, in retrospect, I can totally see Maya stepping out on him.
I don't find him intimidating. That's the interesting distinction that I want to raise, though. He does seem like, oh, he's just a prick. Like, he's just an annoyance more than anything else. And I think that's cool. I think that's quite... It's quite an interesting angle to go with. Yeah. This guy has to die.
Yeah, which, I don't know, I guess a villain for villain's sake is fine. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the 80s or if the guy sticks around.
Yeah.
And he appears in 2008. But yeah, other than, like, he looks pretty schmucky, I don't really have much to say about him.
No.
I was bothered by him in episode 37, but we're not going to talk about that, so... Not right now.
Certainly not. Well, you know, I'm done hating. Don't chain your swords to your backs, kids, especially if they're serrated. It'll only cause irreparable harm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff that happened. If you guys aren't watching Kiva yet, you should be.
Really should be. Like, what are you doing?
It's really good.
Put down your decorative nunchucks and watch Kiva.
Yeah. I shouldn't let him drink.
It's not drink.
Wait. Oh, never mind. You don't drink. You can't drink. It's bad, remember?
Yeah, don't drink, listeners. Especially decorative drinks. God, they're so stupid. If I go around someone's house, he's got decorative drinks.
I actually think you should drink, but that's just me. Occasionally. Not too much. Yeah, in moderation.
You personally. Matt thinks specifically I should drink.
Yeah, I think you need to drink live on air. Shall we go? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, guys, look forward to the next episode. You keep out to keep watching Kiva, and, I don't know. Listen to the next one. Give us some feedback if you have any. We would like it
please,
very much.
Please.
I'm sorry.
We
Good
got
night.
Some last time.
Oh, we did!
We were very grateful. Thank you, Gemini.
Hi, Stefan V8.
Yes, hi.
Hey.
We will talk to you more later. Todd spearheaded contacting you, but you already know
I don't, no. No, seriously, we got mail from a German fan, and I was on it like nothing rhymes with on it.
On it like a bonnet.
No. Oh, that's really good.
All right, goodbye, everybody.
Hey!
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncastrx@gmail.com or contact the Uncommon Crew via Twitter @ComusQ, @IllisClair, @CommonRiderPez. Keep an eye on @UncommonRx, where one can receive updates, deliver input, and give feedback. Also, visit uncommonrx.tumblr.com for additional content.